She breasted boobily to the stairs and titted downwards.
Being queer or like being outside the norm is a big chance to like question certain structures.
Yes, we see things in films or in porn, but that doesn't just mean they exist only in the media. They affect real lives, they affect the way queer people grow up, understand themselves, feel safe, feel loved, feel understood.
If women and queer people are always depicted in stereotypical, sexualized, or comedic fashions, certain audience will view them as that in real life. Welcome to this episode of Cheeksy Chats.
Happy Pride! And for Pride Month, and always, we also encourage you to check out our queer content on Cheeks. We have super hot videos that are made from queers for queers. We also have a bunch of tutorials about fun queer sex practices and also gender-affirming content. Feel free to check it out. Wow. There's the code CHEEKSYCHATS that you can use. There's also the link you can test it with and the code again in our description, and enjoy checking it out. So back to our Pride episode.
Yes. For Pride Month, we wanted to talk about the straight gays, actually.
Oh, the one month that's for us, we decided to talk about the straight people.
Isn't that ironic? Mm. Yeah.
But here we are.
We promise it's not about straight people entirely. Mm-hmm. It's not really. It's about like how the straight gays influences queer culture and people, and how heteronormativity oftentimes still binds or puts constraints on the queer community. Yes, the term straight gaze originates from feminist and queer theory. It refers to this perspective and mode of representation dominated by a heterosexual and oftentimes male viewpoint. This perspective influences how media and cultural products are created. It's also a very fun wordplay.
Straight gaze.
Straight gaze. How
very fun.
Gay people are sort of
viewed.
Straightened.
Yeah.
But also like straighten themselves, like to fit into this like heteronormative framework, voluntarily or like oftentimes subconsciously, I think. But yeah, overall, the straight gaze is a conceptual lens through which the world is viewed from a heterosexual perspective. So this viewpoint is typically male-dominated and affects how people, especially women and queer individuals, are depicted and perceived.
So sort of at the root of this gaze is kind of generally the concept of heteronormativity, which is this concept that being heterosexual is the norm and therefore also normal. And this perspective is kind of the predominant one throughout the world right now, so that the majority is heterosexual, and therefore their views are enforced as the norm, or their lives, or their sexuality and relationship concepts, which kind of means that there's a strong marginalization happening of the queer community because they're seen as othered and not kind of as the norm. And through this, we kind of have erasures of non-binary perspectives and other identities. And there's a very strong gender binary that's happening in the world around us and the media also around us, because the media always kind of reflects what's happening in the world. And in this also kind of means these classical gender roles of masculine men and feminine women within families, and not only then, but basically in any moment of your day. So this is kind of the concept, the underlying concept of heteronormativity, which leads to then, when putting it into a media context, a gaze, which is kind of how you look at things. So there's always, for instance, in photography, which I like to do, there you are gazing at the person and they are looking at you. But as the person taking the picture, you can kind of decide, how am I looking at them and how am I asking them to look at me? So my gaze is kind of the prevailing one. which is also then how the first kind of term of gazing happened, which is the male gaze.
Yes, the straight gaze originated from the discourse around the male gaze, basically. And the male gaze is a term coined in 1975 by film theorist Laura Mulvey. It basically describes how visual media and all arts, so also including books or anything written in literature, is created through the lens of heterosexual men. And it oftentimes manifests itself in stereotypical depictions, especially of women, but also minorities. So some examples for that would be the ditzy blonde. There's so many blonde jokes, I think especially in Germany, but probably internationally as well. Or also some, like, let's say, intersectional stereotypes, like the sassy black woman, or especially in literature, you can see that how, for instance, like black features or like exoticized features are described, like chocolate skin and stuff like that in books. Before the episode, we also remembered this like very fun reference to how men write about women.
Yeah.
So we wanted to include that here.
Yeah, so this is back from the Tumblr days.
Yes.
Shout out to everyone who's also missing Tumblr. where it kind of, portrays what happens if there's only a predomination of the male gaze and women and other people are described through it. But this is an example of how women are described. This is a bit of a joke version of it, an extreme version
the
of
parody.
It.
Parody.
Yeah, a bit, yeah. Here we go. Cassandra woke up to the rays of the sun steaming through the slats on her blinds, cascading over her naked chest. She stretched, her breasts lifting with her arms as she greeted the sun. She rolled out of bed and put on a shirt, her nipples prominently showing through the thin fabric. She breasted boobily to the stairs and titted downwards.
I love this so much. I mean, it made me feel something.
It really also made me feel something. Because it also kind of, yeah, it's a parody and it's a bit like overdrawn, but even this, I immediately, which we also talked about before, get like associations of movies and the way women are shown. For instance, Megan Fox in Transformers.
Yeah. I can visualize the scene, like how she operates the car or like how she fixes it.
I feel like generally they do a lot of things with women and cars. There's also this bad teacher where Cameron Diaz is like in this like mini short washing the car. Washing the car is generally also a big male gaze thing from women in shorts.
Cars and women. I think it combines two fantasies, right? This like interest in automotive things, but also women, sex, and just the perfect marriage of the two.
Yeah, but also the expectation of women to always look perfect, even when washing a car completely styled and in hot pants. Okay.
Yeah, like in the example with Megan Fox, the camera ogles like on her butt and breasts, and it's like this slow camera pan, like showing her complete body. This perfect male fantasy. So in general, the male gaze is oftentimes especially discussed in like visual media because this is so easy to, I think, compare or like to spot immediately. And I think to break it down, the male gaze is just a very dangerous way of depicting the other or marginalized groups for a presumed cis white audience.
And I also want to note at this point that just because you are a cis man, you don't necessarily have to have this view on it. It's not like it's determined. It's just if you don't spend time understanding the subject you're actually speaking about and getting help from people who are in the communities and actually have lived through certain experiences, you are prone to kind of make a stereotypical version or a version what you think it would look like and act like and be like to be that person. Which then can quickly put you kind of in a sphere of looking at things through your male perspective without anyone's help. You can quickly hop into the male gaze train.
Yeah, I think it's basically just engaging with a topic, a community, people without actually engaging with them or seeing them as human or valid experiences and stories.
And kind of prioritizing your own view or perspective on the subject.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And in that way, the male gaze, or the straight gaze, I mean, further maintains the social positions of masculinity, gender roles, and heterosexuality. I think, as you said, it's not always intentional, but especially I think like in Hollywood, there's this way to portray it for mainstream audience like this sort of crystallized or like foreign version of what a person or what a group actually is for comedic value or whatever.
For sure. And I think the problematicism that arises through the male gaze or the straight gaze is kind of this, that there is predominantly only these perspectives, because in positions of power structurally seen, there's a lot of men behind the camera or directing that don't necessarily include people from the community. So because of kind of this structural dynamic, we see a lot less from then the other side, which for instance would be then in this case that we're talking about, the straight gaze would be the queer gaze, which is less known, but kind of coming into the spotlight a bit more now, and kind of a direct response to this male gaze and also the straight gaze in particular, where the queer gaze kind of recognizes the 3D-ness of characters and experiences of the LGBTQIA plus community. And then also through this manages to challenge notions of existing storytelling, but also looking at kind of more than a female versus male gaze thing, but also a gender fluid or non-binary way of telling stories or trans way of telling stories or of looking at things. And in this way, kind of the queer gaze helps us decenter what we prioritize in storytelling right now because of the heteronormativity and the dominance of males in positions, high-ranking positions. And through this kind of, there is this ability to look at stories in different ways and finding queer stories in places where we wouldn't usually find them and seeing a more nuanced version of queer lives and emotions.
Yes, and this is why slogans like representation matters are so important and valid, but not just like having Ariel as a black woman, but also behind the camera, that we have people working on these things actually being of diverse backgrounds and being able to tell their stories or more authentic stories.
For sure, because I think if you just place someone into a story without thinking about what their background is, because it's not just you are queer, being queer comes with experiences that as a straight person you don't necessarily have. And if this isn't incorporated into the storyline, it can often seem very flat. And as a queer person, you can't necessarily relate because you're like, okay, this is not real. Mm. So I don't know what this is.
Yeah. And I think on the other side of that, there's oftentimes this where the straight gaze leads to representation in form that's very like washed down or like watered down, where like the representative character is like the perfect minority instead of being a fully fledged character. They're just here for like the brownie points or whatever, instead of just being a person, a human. Yeah,
for sure. I also collected a bunch of these kind of queer tropes that we will have like a little quiz and look into later.
Yes,
because there's so many, and at this point I'm like, wow, you managed to create like a zillion stereotypical portrayals instead of just taking the time to create a proper one. But no, the straight gaze is strong.
Yes, and it's very persuasive. And that's why we wanted to talk about this in this episode, because now when we talk about, ooh, there in media, the representation is in a certain way, but it's important to note that, as you said before, media is like this plane that's leading our society in many ways. And this media representation leads to consequences in real life. So, for instance, if women and queer people or other marginalized groups are always depicted in stereotypical, sexualized, or comedic fashions, certain audience will view them as that in real life, or just engage with them, or see, in quotations, these lifestyles as not as valid or serious. And this happens if these experiences and stories are not engaged seriously with, or these people are not seen as fully human, basically. And the interesting thing about that is that for heteronormative socialization to succeed, people within a society must feel a certain pressure. And that's why this privileged way, or like this othering of these people, is a way to like further stigmatize these social categories.
Okay, so kind of wrapping up our little intro here is kind of the concept that we want to look at is that the straight gaze perpetuates normative images and understandings of gender and sexuality by portraying heterosexuality as normal and ideal and everything else as deviating from it, or just by also ignoring it.
Yes.
Completely.
Yes, and, sort of that like normalcy is straightness, and the straightness or this normalcy is this way we are supposed to be and supposed to function.
For sure. And now, as I mentioned before, I've prepared a bunch of little tropes, and maybe we can talk about what comes to mind kind of when you hear them.
Oh, we're so excited.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the first one is, I think, a classic.
Mm-hmm.
One super straight gaze on queer people is the gay best friend.
Yes. I think this is the most classic one, or the most acceptable, because it's sort of this accessory to the main character. And it's sort of inoffensive that you can include it without offending, I mean, mainstream or like straight audience that don't want to have anything to do with it. It's sort of this comic relief, right?
Yeah, it's like a comic relief. And kind of the danger of the gay best friend trope is that the gay best friend does everything for the heterosexual woman and has no interest of their own. Maybe they have a mini love story as of recent years that is mentioned, or like an ex that broke their heart. But usually they're kind of almost portrayed as gay, but not really. Their problems are never the focus. They're always the sidekick. And their only reason is to support the range of the main character. So they don't really have like a whole storyline for themselves.
Mm. That's interesting, because I think it sort of mimics this other stereotype of the, I think it was called the spiritual Negro. That's also basically just there
the
to, to just help the main character. And they're just this stepstone, basically, or this helper.
This trope is also a huge form of othering, where they are magical, because otherwise it's almost not worthy of portraying black people. So they're over portrayed into this trope, which
like
is so
figures,
racist,
right?
And problematic. For sure. Okay, getting back. There's so many tropes out there, guys. It's really insane. Another classic is the closeted jock. He's hot. He's on the football team. He's bullying the gay kid. He's homophobic. And all of a sudden,
I hate this. I hate this so much. And in the end, they will be an item, or like they'll make out. I remember, I think, in Skins, the British version, they had this scene where, like, he was bullying the guy, the gay guy, and they were chasing him, like a whole group of jocks, basically. But the main jock got him alone, and then they made out in the grass. And I hate it so much, because it's like, after all that, you just let him do that to you? You're just like, submit. I mean, I think in this trope, the thing is that this like forbidden or bully dynamic is sort of erotic or
I think
sexy,
kind of it is true that people, especially men who are in sports, we see it now in, for instance, football. There's not a single outed, mm-hmm. or in soccer, however you would like to call it, there's not a single outed player. So I do understand that there's like this very conservative environment within the sports that kind of force you into closetedness, which can lead to repression and self-hatred. But I also think it is important for media forms to not only... Okay, wait. 2 points. One thing is, I think it's important to not only portray this, but also to be able to imagine a world where athletes come out and it is not a big deal, to kind of pave a way as well. But also that even though it might be difficult or challenging for you as a person, does not justify homophobic actions towards others. And as all of the people who then make out with the closeted jock who are openly queer, you are kind of allowing this violence to be brought upon yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of also shows queers as, yeah, a bit sadistical, who are like fine with this and that they can only have tragic love.
Yeah. And for this trope, I sometimes wonder if it sort of reinforces some also like dating preferences in gay men, where it's that straightness or like this traditionally masculine behavior is preferred. Maybe that's a stretch, but I think there's maybe something to it. And on the other hand, I think it's also a very annoying trope, because it sort of puts the onus of homophobia back to gay people. It's like, oh, the most homophobic people are also the gays in the closet. I mean, there's probably a truth to that. I'm sure of it, but it's not entirely the fault of like closeted gays that homophobia exists and is like enacted violently. Yeah.
For sure. Moving on, I'm gonna hop on in with two very diverse bisexual ones. So mm-hmm. one bisexual one is that they're always murderers.
Oh my God.
Because of some sort of like emotional turmoil, or because they're promiscuous and confused mm-hmm. and more consistent. There's a bunch of people. Mr. Ripley, Talented Mr. Ripley, which was recently redone. Mm-hmm. He's bisexual. Basic Instincts, bisexual. In House of Cards, bisexual. True Blood, bisexuals. Bisexuals be out there murdering.
Yeah, being murderous and promiscuous people, right?
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah.
Well, that's crazy. And I think they feel like this bisexuality like represents this volatile character attribute. And that's why they're unstable, maybe. It's so dumb.
For sure. And with that also comes a lot of the bi-erasing bisexual, where you never say them, hear the word bisexual. They kind of sleep with people of all genders, but it's just construed as being promiscuous or very lustful, and never as an actual, their actual sexuality.
I think they oftentimes even make it a point to say like, I don't like labels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or something like that. And that it's in a way then even revolutionary for a character to be like, oh, I'm bi.
Yeah.
Or pan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's crazy.
For sure. I think there's also a very, very, very dangerous trope about trans people, which is, there's also a whole documentary on Netflix about it, that they are often portrayed as mentally ill.
Also,
and also in the
right?
murderous yeah. direction, yeah, which is just a completely transphobic take, which begins off of the point that you cannot be mentally healthy and be trans, which is untrue, of course, but through this kind of perpetuates that being trans is dangerous.
Yeah, and even the depiction of their transness and murderousness is oftentimes like discombobulated with cross-dressing and yeah. other things that have nothing to do with transness. And not even cross-dressing is this prerequisite for being a murderer, or like this thing that puts you into this direction. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And to finish off, I got a bunch of lesbian ones. I think one is that especially this especially applies to the portrayal of Black lesbian women, mm-hmm. that they are shown as psychotic or uber masculine.
Oh.
And sort of scary. For instance, in Orange is the New Black.
Ah, yeah. Mm.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer is a option, is an example. Paige in Pretty Little Liars, there's a white example. But yeah, that there's a lot of, an underlying kind of also disease in not liking men.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting, this trope, for the thing that we mentioned with the male gaze, that it's not just about the depiction of women, but also in general minorities, because it shows that gender, sexuality, and race help to contextualize this gaze and these problematic depictions or perceptions of these groups.
For sure. Another one, which also kind of plays with the concept of lesbians not being complete without a man, is that all lesbians want kids. So in a bunch of like TV series, you see lesbians being in a relationship and being happy, but because they don't have a man, they can't get a child and they can't adopt a child and it's killing them. And then one of them ends up being with a man again in the end.
Oh, Lord.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a bunch of these, which are also, of course, created by the system not allowing two women to adopt, etc. But kind of that they're child crazy, and there's even kidnappings of lesbians who desperately want a baby and stuff like this. And
I mean, it sort of reminds me a bit of this trope where lesbian women are also just confused about sexuality, and then this man comes in and turns them, or like is able to like convince them that, oh, heterosexuality is the true way, or like, that's what I really am. I just had to wait for the right man. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my nightmare.
Nightmare.
I think one we will touch upon on in a second again. Oh no, we can go into it now. Is girl on girl is hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
The complete objectification, but also, of course, only of straight presenting and very norm beautiful skinny women making out.
Still very normative.
Super normative for this view.
And I think this is a dynamic that's also very visible in the real world, like not just in media, but also how I think even politicians in the past have talked like this, that, oh, two men are crazy, but women, but still just in this erotic context, not that I might give lesbian rights. It's just in this like, oh, but I like to see them kiss. Yeah.
For sure. And I've also had this with people I've dated when I've told them I'm bisexual and they were like, yeah, I would love to watch, or do you want to have a threesome? Which also, of course, is always the straight thing with the bisexuality, but that you're not... men aren't then threatened by it because they just find it sexy and don't understand that it is a whole other thing for itself and an actual connection that is just as valid, or maybe even more valid in some cases, than your connection with a man. And I think this is kind of one that happens, yes, in TV series, but also one that has kind of hopped over to a lot of pornography, where I remember when I watched lesbian porn at the beginning, I was kind of confused because I was like, this is what I'm meant to be doing. I don't know if this is what it is for me.
Mm.
And then having sex with women and being like, ah, okay.
Yeah.
The discrepancy.
I had this conversation with a friend a couple years ago where we talked about porn, and she was like, it's super difficult to find like lesbian porn. And I was like, oh, I thought it was like super popular. And she went like, yeah, but
for men.
Not actual like lesbian porn. It's just this performance for men, for straight men mostly.
Because I also feel like a lot of lesbian porn is done by straight women.
Yeah. I mean, there's also the same dynamic in gay porn, I think, with like gay for pay, but it's a completely different.
What is gay for pay? Ah,
yeah,
gay like, for pay.
Straight men are doing gay porn for payment, but in that there's still, the target audience is still gay men. It's not like that the lesbian porn is produced for men.
Yeah. And I think, okay, there's like, as I said, a million tropes, but one I want to finish off with is, even though the others are not good, I think still the most challenging one, which is that everyone is straight.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many TV shows where LGBTQ views just don't exist. There is no character. There is no one you can, as a queer person, associate with. And it makes you feel like you're not part of the world the way you are, and also kind of to, yeah, that it kind of also harbors this anti-LGBTQ view that shows the makers of the series would prefer we don't exist.
And it's, again, creating this narrative that this is normalcy, that straightness is normalcy. Yeah. I think even nowadays in many reactions to more queer media, there's this like, oh, now it's political. Just because you include queer people or people of color even. And I think this is also a very definite consequence of the straight gaze and also male gaze. Another thing that is represented very scarcely in media nowadays still is trans people. And a real life consequence of that is that trans people oftentimes have to perform their gender like exactly in that traditional way. Like they have to perform their gender to a T in order to be like validated or to be valid in general. Like there's no room for authentic expression or gender fluidity oftentimes. Trans people often held to the standard that if they don't perform their gender in a specific way, they're not really trans. They're not real women, real men. And on the other side of that, it's crazy that we have this dynamic that TERFs or gender critical feminists, I wouldn't call it feminists, gender critical people are accusing trans people of reinforcing harmful stereotypes about gender. So like, oh, why are you wearing pink dresses and long nails? This is like anti-feminist and you're reinforcing. Blah, blah, blah. So either way, it's sort of in vain and there's going to be pushback, but it's still just against marginalized people. Because I remember in one ContraPoints video, she mentioned that this pushback is mostly given to trans people or like people that are already marginalized. No one's coming up to Kim Kardashian as being like, why are you wearing a dress? You're reinforcing negative stereotypes about women. So that's also a crazy thing about the straight gaze.
Yeah, I think in this form of like the straight gaze helping out the TERF community, it's kind of just fostering transphobia without any rootedness. And to your first point, I once saw a Spanish, I think, short film where it's about a trans person who's kind of filling out the forms to get top surgery. And it's a trans man and he has to fill out like, do you ever wear nail polish, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you always see like little flashbacks where he's doing things that according to the survey are construed as feminine. And he then always crosses no to make sure that he can have the surgery, because the binary is seen so strictly still that you have to, as you mentioned, conform 100% to be able to get access to medication, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which I thought was a very interesting portrayal of this particular struggle that is created by the straight gaze and heteronormativity. So I think it's important to understand that yes, we see things in films or in porn, but that doesn't just mean they exist only in the media. They affect real lives. They affect the way queer people grow up, understand themselves, feel safe, feel loved, feel understood. And also the way straight people see themselves as priority. And I think it is important to understand that this affects actual lives.
Yes. That they're the priority and also the default.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think in many ways representation is getting better oftentimes, but I think tropes like the gay best friend are still oftentimes used as a vehicle for that. So maybe in season two, they're expanding upon the story of the gay best friend, but oftentimes it's like this little door opener or like way to start something. So in some ways, I feel like tropes can have the potential for something good. But again, it's about like representation behind the camera and also intention.
Yeah, because I also think, I mean, what am I going to say about the gay best friend, you know? I mean, it is what it is. It does happen that you have gay best friends. I think it's just really about the way that who is portrayed, how and how much.
Mm.
And how much screen time does what character get. And So, the straight gaze. I also understand, I think that the queer gaze sort of is coming more into focus with certain productions, that we're seeing representations that are more 3D, that kind of show joy as well as emotions in general, and not just the helperness or the insanity that are only made of the roles. And I think that that is a good step forward, but there's a lot to be done.
Yeah. And the beautiful thing about queer stories is that people can feel seen in those. Like, I think especially for young queer people, it can be so confusing to be in this alone and to have this weird comedic or insulting representation, being like, okay, but I don't want to be that. And I think, like, imagine like a young trans kid could be so confused to be like, okay, maybe I am trans, and you see all these horrid representations and being like, okay, but
I'm not a murderer.
I'm not a freak. I'm not sexually perverse or, A common argument that I saw about the straight gaze and how it affects the queer community online was that it's just a very chronically online discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to a certain extent, that's definitely true. But I know from myself and from friends that these straight gazy things are definitely happening in real life too.
Mm-hmm.
Like little questions, weird encounters.
Yeah, asking if they can have a threesome when you tell them you're bi.
Yeah. Oh, but this is something that I wanted to mention about these tropes, because in many of them you see that you're super sexualized, like as a queer person. And it's weird that it has this dynamic where straight or heterosexual structures oftentimes put queerness and sexuality on this like pedestal, that it's like so the most important thing to mention or engage with. And I think this is also something that often is happening in real life too. Yeah. For instance, with trans people asking about directly about genitals, like super invasive questions that are, I wouldn't ask this random man, like, are you cut?
Yeah.
Are you circumcised?
Nice to meet you, by the way.
Yeah. But also classical questions like, who's the woman? Who's the man in a relationship?
Yeah.
Who wears the pants? And oftentimes, the straight gaze, I feel like, operates in a way where sexual dimorphism is recreated. Like the top is masculine and the bottom is very feminine. And these roles are superimposed on these people and they have to reenact them in every aspect of the relationship.
Like also within the bottom and top.
Yeah.
Aspect of it all, where you also don't have to just be a bottom or a top. You can also be a switch, or you can move away from the labels. It's okay.
Yeah.
If you are a man and you don't want to be dominant in bed, or if you are a woman and you do, or if you are non-binary and want a super mask role that doesn't make you less non-binary or, yeah. So yeah. I think having this very strong binary structure and classifying of what is what is also a big part of the straight gaze. It really relies on sorting things into the binary and when things don't fit into the binary to make them weird or dangerous. And the queer gaze as an answer to that is it is not dangerous. It is just a difference to how you are living, but that might not be so weird as you find it, but it might be something very beautiful and special and interesting and actually something worth exploring instead of quickly othering and making a joke.
Yeah. I think what's very beautiful about the queer gaze or queer media in general is that we get genres or things like camp that some people learn, okay, maybe I am weird and maybe that's okay. And maybe I find strength in that. For instance, I hate making Disney analogs, but like that so many queer people identify with Disney villains or also with, in general, like being a monster, but also having that like, okay, but...
Like in a drag way, you mean?
Yeah.
Kind of like owning
yeah,
this
like sort of power armor, like gay power armor, and that it's not wrong to be different. Yeah.
And I also think it's transformative and powerful to be different because it opens up so many new doors and opportunities for love in ways that the straight view that kind of forces everyone to be a certain way closes the door on.
Yeah, because being queer or like being outside the norm is a big chance to like question certain structures and finding a way of life that fits you. Another example for how not just sexuality enforces or like informs the straight gaze, but also gender and race is, like you mentioned with your previous trope, how Black people are oftentimes masculinized, is that a word? Or like seen as more masculine in queer communities. Like that, for instance, Black femmes are greeted with the expectation, oh, you are the masculine part, right? You're butch or you're the top. And I've, like, even from my early days on Grindr, I could express myself in any way I want. I could be like in a crop top and wearing like a body chain and people be like, okay, so are you a top? And like, it's also, again, very much of a sexualization within the queer community, but also this role that through these straight gazes, it gets adapted into queer culture.
Yeah, and I do think the straight gaze, because heteronormativity also relies on whiteness and focuses very much on white stories, that also there's like an intersectional or double othering happening with Black queer people.
Yeah, especially if the straight gaze reinforces gender roles, right?
Yeah.
That are like, okay, being Black is more masculine, so whatever you do, you're in this camp.
Yeah, because Blackness is often portrayed as hyper-masculine in this narrative. Yeah. And we also see this, as I mentioned before, with this little trope of the lesbians who desperately want kids. It's kind of this straight argument or the straight gaze that because straight couples have kind of biological parenthood, that this is basically the only form of family you see in media instead of other family constellations with poly couples, or sometimes there's a gay couple who have adopted a kid. There's this trope occasionally, modern family, etc., which can also be nice, but I do think it is really relevant to understand that the heteronormative family relies on the concept of marriage, which relies on the concept of a history of a woman being dependent on a man, and that reconsidering this straight view of this is what family is and this is what it should be look like and this is what the gender roles are. Someone stays at home, someone gets money. What other family constellations bring, especially because pre-to-colonization now also, the Global South does bring forward a lot of other constellations that worked out great at the time.
That's super interesting.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think heteronormativity is oftentimes used in that way to link back to the normal or enforce these structures because these other forms of expression, lifestyles, whatever you want to call it, like being gay, lesbian, trans, queer, non-binary, is weird. And it does not help with this like capitalist game plan, basically, the white picket fence family and stuff like that.
Yes. So we would like to thank everyone for listening today. And would like to remind you that if you want to view things that are a little less straight and male gazy, that we have a lot of content on Cheeks called Cheeksy Chats. You can find the link and the description in our episode description. And we would like to thank you all for listening today and to remind you all that the straight gaze and heteronormativity are quite predominant, but that the queer gaze is important for self-love, self-affirmation, and to encourage and watch small productions, porn and otherwise, or read books that kind of change your mind, or if you are queer yourself, make you feel seen because you are valuable and you deserve to not be a trope.
Yes, the future is queer and you can make your life whatever you want. You can find your way, whatever that means for you.
Yes. Thank you so much and see you soon.
See you next time. Bye. Happy Pride.
Always.